On this episode, I spoke with managing partner at Verbatim, Brianna Doe, who is a marketing and branding expert and helps investment firms, VC startups, B2B, B2C, you name it, to help with influencer marketing, social media, and LinkedIn growth. And we talked about all of those things today. She's also the host of Stop the Scroll podcast. So let's dive right into the episode with Brianna. I'd love to give the audience a chance to get to know you a little bit before we dive into some topics like influencer marketing, social today. So if you wouldn't mind, just give us some bullet points on your career up to this point and what has led you to what you're working on now.
Definitely. So taking it all the way back to college, I studied film and media. My only goal was to be a screenwriter. Fell in love with marketing while I was in school and started volunteering for nonprofits. Ended up pursuing marketing full-time after I graduated and stayed pretty industry agnostic. So I was diving into sustainability and climate tech, health and wellness, normal tech, you name it. And always worked on the side. Always had freelance gigs or consulting gigs because I was really determined to learn as much as I could about marketing as quickly as possible. I loved it and I just wanted to dive right in and figure out what I wanted to specialize in too. So over the last 10 years, that's really what I did. I figured out what I loved, what I didn't love, which facets of marketing I really enjoyed. Ended up being mostly growth marketing, content, social, and influencer marketing, which brings us to today. So I'm the founder of Verbatim, which is a marketing agency, full service, targeting startups, VC firms, you name it. And then on the side, I also create content for myself on LinkedIn, run a job board. I've been told, I heard a term not so long ago called a portfolio career, and that's really what I'm passionate about building. You know, marketing is my main bread and butter, the main thing I love, but it's fun to dive into other, areas too.
Totally. And I love that diving into the things you want to do, getting away from, the things that maybe you don't feel as strong in or not as passionate about within marketing. I can definitely relate to that. I am curious what those things are though for you. Like what are the pieces of marketing that you're like, well, I'll let somebody else do that stuff.
Graphic design is a big one. In all my past roles, I always worked for very small, really early stage startups. So I was wearing so many different hats. I'm sure people can relate to that. And design and branding always fell into my wheelhouse. And I love branding and brand strategy. But when it came down to actually being the one creating all the collateral, I have so much respect for designers because I realized pretty quickly it was just not my thing.
So building Verbatim now, walk me through how you kind of landed on the core pillars or services that you actually mostly focus on now. Like what led you to think that these were the things that you could be most helpful to our clients with?
Yeah, that's definitely been an evolution. So for context, when I first launched Verbatim, it was a lot more niche. It was focused really heavily on personal branding, especially on LinkedIn. Like I mentioned, I create content on LinkedIn, so I love helping founders and executives do that. But as our target audience shifted and our ICP shifted, we realized that our clients needed more support than just personal branding or just growth marketing. A lot of the clients that were coming to us and are coming to us don't have a website or they don't have like a solid brand story or brand strategy. And so, coming from somebody who has worked with agencies for so long, I recognize how overwhelming it can be to work with multiple agencies across different time zones and, different niches and industries. And we really wanted to become that one-stop shop so that they can go to one place and basically get everything taken care of well. And it worked out because, as I mentioned, I have a really diverse background in marketing and I'm really interested in multiple facets of it. And so being able to now utilize all of those different passions and interests has been really helpful for me and for our clients.
With like social versus influencer marketing and other things that you do now, what's the connective tissue between those services like? What's the overlap between what a good influencer marketing manager or consultant can do versus like a social media consultant? Is there overlap there or are they very, very different?
No, there's definitely overlap, especially with B2B influence marketing and B2B social. We have quite a few B2B clients. So it's been really interesting. Like influencer marketing is relatively new in this space. And so that same level of creativity and experimentation that you bring to social, you're not entirely sure what's going to work, right? There are some playbooks you can follow or ideas you can try that you've seen work in the past, but it's really going to depend on your audience, what resonates with them. So whether it's organic social or partnering with influencers, you have to be really clear on who your brand is, the story you're trying to tell, the features and benefits that you want to call out. Because once you start bringing other people into that campaign, like influencers and content creators, they are your voice, right? They're the face, at least for the extent of that campaign. So it's really important to be clear on that, but also be willing to give them creative freedom, similar to social media.
For a B2B company, like you said, it's kind of new where influencer marketing is still pretty nascent in that regard. A lot of B2B companies haven't figured out how to make that interesting yet, how to actually do it. Whereas with e-commerce, D2C, it's like, you know, it's pretty rampant. It's everywhere. People know how to do it. It's pretty much in every company. But for the B2B clients, what are the pros and cons of working in-house on influencer marketing versus outsourcing to an agency or a consultant on influencer? Like what's the pros and cons of both of those?
It's a good question. I'll start with the cons, actually. So similar to outsourcing any facet of marketing, they don't work specifically in-house with you. They work with multiple clients. You don't get all of their time, right? And they'll learn, a great consultant or a great agency will learn literally everything they need to know about your brand and your industry and your goals, everything, right? But there is still that limitation there. They're not in the day-to-day. They're not in all of the meetings. So it's a hurdle that you can, you know, jump across together, but it is still a con. But at the same time, it's a lot less, you're taking on a lot less risk than hiring, let's say, an influencer marketing manager when you're just starting to test out influencer marketing. It's a big commitment, especially when you don't know what you want from the program yet or what you want from your campaigns. And that's where I think the pros come in. You're able to kind of skip over a lot of that learning and testing phase and work quickly with experts who have worked in other B2B industry or other B2B companies and know what to do, what not to do, how to, you know, pivot quickly and make the right changes. So there are pros and cons for sure.
For B2B companies that might not have tried influencer marketing yet, but are looking to expand there, how do you define success, especially for the earlier campaigns where you're just getting started? How do you think about what a successful influencer marketing campaign looks like for a B2B company?
I love that you asked that because that's actually the first thing I tell any company to do. I think it's really easy to just want to dive in and find some influencers and start doing sponsored posts or, you know, whatever the case may be. But if you don't define success, one, within your immediate team, and then two, with your leadership team, what are you going to do when the campaign's over, right? And everybody had different ideas of what it looks like to win. So the first thing to do, I always recommend when you're trying to define success, is understand what a win would look like for the marketing team. And then let's say for the C-suite. What I see a lot of is the marketing team is looking at it as a brand awareness play, especially if it's the first campaign, or maybe like website traffic, things like that. But it's never really tied directly to lead generation or direct conversions. It's not typically the case when you zoom out and talk to the leadership team of that same company, right? They want to see leads. They want to see book demos or meetings booked, whatever the case may be, whatever works for their company. So there are multiple ways you can look at it. And whatever you decide, that will then impact, one, the influencers that you work with, and two, the kind of content that you have them create. For example, B2B is interesting because, you know, as opposed to B2C, it's a longer buying cycle, right? And B2B buyers typically aren't making a buying decision or purchasing decision based off of one post that they see from a social media influencer or celebrity. There's a lot of trust that has to be built. They're looking for thought leadership and expertise. So if you're defining success directly by, let's say, generated leads from a campaign, the way you then build that campaign is going to vary quite a bit. You're going to look less at just one-off sponsored posts and more at like a longer-term partnership where you can co-create content.
Do any examples come to mind that you've worked on? And you can anonymize if you need to or not, but examples of really cool influencer campaigns for B2B or B2C, whichever one, that you just really liked that worked pretty well.
Yeah. So one recent example that I thought was really great was Hootsuite. They released like an industry report and they worked mainly on LinkedIn is what I saw, but they worked with B2B influencers, mostly in the marketing space across social content, growth and demand gen, you name it, to release this report. But what they did was they had the influencers get early access to the report and give their own insights on it in their content. And I found that really effective because one thing that I see quite a bit of is influencers that are expected to speak about a product when they haven't had access to it. So even something as simple as an industry report, you could tell that they had had the time to review it, that they were really passionate about what they were talking about. And it was really, really impactful.
What are the, maybe not most common, but most interesting or popular, I guess, trending formats of influencer campaigns that you're seeing right now that are working? Like, is it just sponsored posts, or are there other ways that this is happening that's really interesting?
So the one I'm seeing most often are sponsored posts. And I do think that's because it's the easiest way in, right? It's the easiest way to dip your toes in the water, or your brand's toes in the water, without committing to a full program. So I see it the most often, but I don't think it's the most interesting. I think the most interesting is any form of co-created content. So I've seen brands partner with influencers for like 6 months at a time to create blogs and participate in webinars and industry reports, whatever the case may be. And those are really, really interesting because, one, I'm not just seeing the brand's name once. I'm seeing this partnership form. I'm seeing the influencer learn more and more about the brand, promote it more authentically and organically. And those are the ones that I've seen that are most successful, which is exactly why I mentioned longer-term partnerships. If you really want to impact the B2B buyer, that's what they're looking for, right? And they need that credibility and that time to build up the credibility.
Totally. And yeah, I mean, as long as the company is willing to, you know, invest in the long-term relationship, which unfortunately there are many that will not. Would love to dive a little bit into social as another kind of tangent here, because you've built a big audience, you've helped other people, you've mentioned coaching executives and helping other people grow as well. So you clearly have some insights here on what it takes to grow on social, even though that kind of changes from time to time. But first off, when you're looking at growing a brand account versus a personal account, what's your advice there when companies say we want to grow our company page versus like we want to grow our personal brands? How do you think about advising people there?
Are we specifically speaking about LinkedIn or any channel?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that one is really LinkedIn heavy, but really any channel where they want to put their logo first as opposed to leaning on the people inside the company.
Yeah, LinkedIn specifically is an interesting one. The first thing I do, because I hear that a lot, we want to grow the company page, we want to see more followers or, you know, anything like that. My first question is why? Because I'm really curious how they're defining success. The thing with LinkedIn company pages is, surprisingly enough, LinkedIn really doesn't do much to help you grow a company page. They really put the emphasis on personal accounts and personal profiles. So it's possible. You see companies do it all the time. The page does well. It's constantly, you know, growing in follower count. But there is a lot of value in amplifying the voices of people within the company instead, and you'll start to see the indirect growth for the company page. But if they're really adamant about growing the company page first, I dig into why. It's really important to understand, does success strictly look like more followers, or is the actual goal connected to revenue in some way? I have worked with brands where it is just followers, and that's fine. But sometimes you can uncover this idea that, well, we want followers, but really the goal is to have them go to the website and, you know, convert and purchase and whatever. So getting clear on that is really crucial. And then, regardless of whatever strategy you build around the company page, it'll only behoove you or the brand to also include personal profiles then as well. So if the founder is open to posting, creating content, or people within the company, it can all direct back to the company page.
With so many companies now kind of getting onto it where they know, oh, the strategy is thought leadership, provide helpful content. I can look at how other people are formatting stuff so they can get a ways there, just kind of mimicking what other people are doing, and that's becoming more common. So now as that becomes more common, how do you recommend or get, what advice do you have for actually standing out in the feed on LinkedIn or other channels as well?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite topics. So two things. One, consistency, and not consistency so much with posting, surprisingly, but with engagement. LinkedIn is one of those social media channels where it really rewards users that engage more than anything else. There will be weeks where maybe I'm taking a break from creating content or whatever, but I'm still engaging and commenting on other people's posts, and I still see growth on the platform. And so it's really important to have a strong system or strategy around that. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. It can be 15, 30 minutes in the morning, comment on some people's posts, find people whose content you really enjoy and engage with them. But that's a really important piece. And the other piece of advice that I'd point out is, have a clear point of view and a clear angle. It doesn't have to be super polarizing or anything, right? But people will connect with the perspective that you're sharing. If you're just sharing facts, right, without sharing your opinion on it or your perspective, it's harder for people to connect with that, especially on a platform where they're creating content. So make sure you have a perspective, make sure you have an angle, and also make sure you have clear content pillars. So understand what you want to talk about, what you want to be known for, so people can start to make that connection with you too.
Connecting this kind of back to actually the influencer marketing side, if you get enough people doing that, you'll create more micro influencers. And so I'm curious, going back to that a little bit, how do you think about, well, maybe we should go for, we should work with 100 micro influencers for campaigns as opposed to one huge one? Like, when's the right moment to go with that, more shots on goal, versus we're going to go with the big fish and try to do a huge campaign?
That is the million-dollar question, because I feel like I'm in this debate right now with marketers. It's a fun debate, but there's this theory or this idea that the more followers somebody has, the less impactful the campaign you do with them will be. You should only work with ones, let's say, from like 5K to 20K followers. And to your point, I think it's more nuanced than that. So there are times for both. And it depends on the goals of the campaign, the industry that your brand is in, who your target audience is, and how niche it is. So one thing you'll find is if you work with micro or nano influencers, you can find ones with a really niche audience. They might have 6,000 followers, but 5,550 of them are exactly who you want to speak to. They are the decision makers, they're your target audience, and that's great. With something like the Hootsuite campaign that I mentioned, there might be more value in casting a wider net, having a mix of micro influencers and some larger ones, because it's more broad. You know, it's not just demand gen marketers specifically, it's all marketers. So if you're working with influencers in that space, you can find value regardless. Just working with larger influencers, strictly larger influencers, it really depends on, like I mentioned, budget and goals. I do see a lot of value in working with ones with larger follower counts if they can point you in the direction of their demographics, who is in their audience, and how does it connect with your ICP. I wouldn't recommend automatically dismissing anybody above 50K.
Last question here before I kind of give you a chance to let us know what you're working on now, where people can find you. If you imagine your tech stack right now, all the tools that you use for yourself, for clients, whomever, what are the maybe 2 to 3 marketing tools that if I took them away, it would be devastating to your workflow?
That is a good question. Well, HubSpot, first and foremost. At this point, I feel like I should be paying them rent because I'm in that platform so much. So I don't think I can function without it.
HubSpot's
right?
A fan favorite. Yeah, that's a common
really
answer.
So HubSpot for sure. Marketing tools specifically, or tools that I use for?
I'm open to anything.
Okay. ClickUp is another one. I thrive on processes. And so we use it for clients, but we also just use it internally. And it's a project management tool, for those who don't know. It's a game changer. It makes everything seamless. So I don't think I could function without that one either. And I would say Shield. So for the clients that are focused on LinkedIn personal branding, we use that to track analytics. LinkedIn does offer analytics natively in the platform, but it's a little limited. And with this, you can really track your growth and a lot of information that you can't get otherwise.
Awesome. Well, Bree, I appreciate you hopping on. Before we go, let us know where people can connect with you and kind of what you're working on, what's next for you and for Verbatim.
Definitely. So you can find me at briannadoe.com or my agency site, weareverbatim.com. And really what I'm working on now is growing the agency and getting my new podcast, Stop the Scroll, up and running. So it's been live for a little bit at this point. It's been a lot of fun just talking to different marketers and influencers about, you know, the influencer marketing space.